But our first guest now is Paddy Steinford. Now, he was the first draft pick in 1996 at the Richmond Football Club. And it is fair to say his football career didn't quite go to plan. But what Paddy has done off the footy field has been pretty remarkable for a boy from Glen Waverley. Paddy gets paid to improve the performance of some of the best athletes in the world. He's worked as a high performance manager at the Adelaide Football Club before leaving to America to work as the performance coach for the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFL. He was head of the mental performance at the Toronto Blue Jays in Major League Baseball and is currently the Director of Performance and Leadership Development at the Philadelphia 76ers. And he joins us now on RSN Central. Hello to you, Paddy. Thanks for joining us.
G'day, Hawley. Thanks for having me.
Mate, what happened with your football career at Richmond?
I think you summed it up well. It definitely didn't go according to plan. There was a number of injuries. We had, I actually had three different head coaches in the 5 years that I was at Richmond. So a lot of changes going on. And I didn't really get a run at it. So the one or two opportunities I did have, I probably didn't play as well as I would have liked. And then that was that. At the time, I hated it, but things have turned out okay.
How did you get into what you're doing right now? And what was the inspiration behind that?
Partly from when I was a player, I looked at different, I tried to leave no stone unturned. And one of the areas was the mental side of the game that I really got right into. I then went on and finished the physiotherapy degree. So that kind of combined and crossed over a little bit. And to be honest, there was probably a catalyst for it when I was at the Crows. I was there as the leadership development manager, as they called it, but it was basically the PDM of that team plus a little bit of leadership coaching and then led into high performance manager a few years down the track. And one of the things that we were dealing with while I was there was that they had, they'd been fined for the Kurt Tippett salary cap saga. When I was there. And we lost our first two draft picks for 2 years in a row. And so in my position, my job was to try and take some guys who had fallen into the third round and make them the same, the equivalent value of the first rounder. And with that, I started digging back into my stuff from my playing time around the mental side of the game. And I discovered a few researchers here in America who I set out to talk with. And then one thing led to another. I ended up over here partly off the back of some inspiration from Dean Bailey, who I spent a lot of time with before he passed away. And then probably a little bit of a coincidence as well in that when I started really connecting with people over here, the Crows unfortunately fired the only head coach I ever worked with in the AFL, which was Brenton Sanderson. And I was able to get a payout. So that sort of propelled me over here and I haven't been back since.
I want to touch on Dean Bailey. I read an article that you penned about his wonderful life and the way that his great mate Phil Walsh talked about him at his funeral. What made Dean Bailey such a wonderful coach and why was he so special to you, Paddy?
Probably a number of reasons on the second question. I'll get to that in a bit. But you ask anyone who worked with Bales who had him as a coach, whether it was head coach in Melbourne or as an head assistant in Adelaide or anywhere. I think he was at Essendon before all that. And to a man, everyone will say he was about as authentic as you can get. Rarely did he lead you up the garden path. He didn't have much pretense about him. And he was genuinely interested in the lives of the young men that he was responsible for. A lot of the Crows guys would eat at his place for dinner. He'd go around, he'd have them around, and his wife Karen and their two sons would basically take some of the players in as de facto extra kids, I guess. And that's for guys who are living interstate and they're only young adults. Bales was just amazing on that front. He was passionate about being as good as possible and working hard, and he wanted to win as much as the next guy. But what set him apart was how human he was and how much he really cared for the humans he was taking care of.
Was he ahead of his...
Sorry, what was that?
I was just... Keep going, mate. I was just going to say, was he ahead of his time with the way that he looked after people when he was coaching them?
you could almost say it was a throwback. Like, he was, it was like what you'd expect when, and I, thanks to my average football career, I had the experience of going down to the state league level and shipping over to play in South Australia. And the way they have to look after their people on the human side, because they can't pay them, it's kind of like a throwback to an older era when you'd move and they'd try and get you a job and they'd get you set up and create a community. That's really what Bales, what I saw in him when we were working at the Crows. For your second part of your question about why he meant so much to me or why I connected with him, like, one of my first experience, that was my first ever job in professional sport as a full-time job with a team. And I'm moving over to Adelaide and I get an email the day before my flight. Here's your flight details. By the way, Dean Bailey has said you can bunk with him until you get a spot sorted. And so next thing I know, I'm living with Dean Bailey, who had just been let go from Melbourne not too long before that. I didn't really know what to expect. And he was phenomenal in terms of the way he took me in as just a fellow coach, but also, you know, taught me some stuff about the league. And he was just amazing on that front. And one of the things we did share in common was our interest in the mental side of the game. And he would often say, that's going to be it's going to be a point of difference, that the teams can get ahead of the curve on that. So he kind of was ahead of the curve in the way he thought about that, for sure.
In America, that you've worked with NFL clubs, Major League Baseball club, and of course you're working with the 76ers right now, and you worked in the AFL. Are all sports people, doesn't matter what sport they play, are they all wired the same, or is baseball is different to basketballers, and basketball is different to American footballers?
They're basically the same. Like, everyone who's in professional sport is a competitor to some degree. And as with what we have back home in an AFL team, there can be some really competitive dudes and there can be just be some good dudes who happen to be good at what they do. And I'd say, you know, the difference between baseball and American football is similar to the difference between cricket and football. Whilst, you know, from a personality point of view, you'll have a normal bell curve, and at one end there's a couple of people who you wouldn't want to date your sister, and then there's a couple of people at the other end that you'd want to marry your sister. Same sort of thing over here in terms of the type of humans and the quality of people that you get around a sports team. But yeah, there are different quirks. It takes a different cat to stand around a field for 3 hours or longer in cricket, for 3 hours in baseball, than it does for a guy who gets on the court for maybe 30 minutes total in an NBA basketball game.
0416905052 to join the conversation. Our special guest here on RSN Central this morning is the Performance and Leadership Development Officer there at the Philadelphia 76ers. Paddy, what are your KPIs? What do you want to achieve within a year, say, with the 76ers?
It's a good question, Holly. It really depends on which part of my role we're looking at. So, as you said, there's two parts of it. One is performance and one is leadership development. And it's probably more indicative of the performance side in that, you know, in order to really work on that front, there's got to be good relationships with the players for them to open up, for them to trust you enough to talk about things that they may not talk about with a coach or with their own teammate even. So number one KPI there is developing trust. And then number two is the ability to actually get guys to commit to plans and have regular review systems, which is an ongoing work in progress, because the landscape here is really, really different than what it has been, you know, back home in Australia. On the leadership front, it's much more about working with the coaches and, you know, the more prominent players. And in reality, the one main thing that we're looking for there is just regular conversations and the ability to have an open environment where the people who are the centres of influence, the captain, the coach, have a clear picture and an agreed picture of what sort of culture they want. And then they have channels of communication to help shape that a little bit.
What kind of culture do sporting organisations want or need?
Well, it really differs. You know, you can take two examples here of teams that have been super successful in the NBA. One is the Golden State Warriors, who are the most recent dynasty, and then prior to that was the San Antonio Spurs. When you speak to people who have been at both organizations, they're incredibly different. The Warriors was very free-flowing, happy-go-lucky, let's all enjoy our basketball and express ourselves. And the Spurs was very, you know, pound the rock, consistency, sacrifice, selflessness. And not that both teams didn't have components of the other, but the specifics of what the culture is about is less important than the fact of both of those teams had their best player, was their best person, and they lined up with the coach. And when you can have that, when your most important player has the same value set up as the coach, and they are both incredible people, then it's really hard to go wrong.
We've seen the success of the Richmond Football Club here in this country over the last 3 or 4 years. And when you listen to Damien Hardwick and Trent Cotchin and even Dusty Martin at times, they talk about embracing their vulnerabilities. How important is that, Paddy?
Hugely important. It's something that you can't, it's really hard to quantify, but in terms of the ability to, for anyone to get better at their job, for them to accept feedback and for them to be okay with making mistakes, it has a ripple effect of, I can take feedback because I don't feel like I have to be perfect. I'm allowed to be vulnerable and not, you know, and allow myself to be not perfect in the eyes of my peers. So I can take feedback and I can get better. And also it then reduces some of the anxiety on the big stage where I don't feel like my value as a person is defined by whether or not I play well today or whether or not I'm the best player that everyone thinks I can be. And when you have that, it allows people to go out and do their job without staking their entire life on it, and it just turns the pressure needle down a little bit, which usually over the long run and on the biggest stages allows them to play as well as possible.
How do you teach that to someone like a Benny Simmons when he's got a lot of pressure on him, he's worth millions of dollars, and everybody expects him to dominate a basketball match every time he steps out onto that court?
Yeah, it's less about teaching someone that and more about creating the environment around them as best as possible. We definitely have those sort of conversations, and it's something that we're constantly trying to pull back to, because the world around these athletes and these leagues and these teams is out of control. The show Entourage or the show Jerry Maguire, they're not too far from reality in terms of the sort of stuff that goes on behind the scenes and away from the game. And so it's less about teaching them stuff and more about being consistent with the support you put around them and the sort of conversations that we try and have regularly.
You work with some of the superstars of the NBA, and there's a lot of media pressure. And at the moment with the 76ers, Joel Embiid and Benny Simmons, and there's talk that they don't get along at the moment. They struggle to play against each other or play with each other. In your role as the Performance and Leadership Development Officer there at the 76ers, how do you work with them to deal with those pressures, especially when they get asked about it every time they basically speak to the media?
Well, it's really one of the biggest things that we need to be able to do is bring them back to what's important. And really, what, you know, reality is not, it's not what they put in the media, and what they try and say is reality is not actually the case often. And the guys know that as well as the next person, because they're all on Twitter and they're all on Instagram and they see the fake posts and they see people talk about it on TV. But it's more about trying to bring them back to what's important to them individually, what's real for them individually, and also what their, you know, what the shared goals are. Because while Ben might want to be an all-star another year in a row and Joel wants to be the defensive player of the year, there's also a shared goal it's bigger than both of those. And really, it's about trying to refocus and reconnect about as often as possible.
What about Joel? Such a fascinating character, Paddy. What is he like behind the scenes when you get to really know him?
Well, it's the same as anyone. Holly, I imagine, like, similar to yourself and everyone who works at the station there and anyone you might work with, there's a public-facing personality, and then the person behind closed doors or in the back coffee room or when you're on the plane is really different. And so you've got to take that approach to any of the guys when you're working with them. And Joel, Ben, any of the other guys are basically in the same bunk. And really, the key is to not go in with any preconceived notions. Joel is actually a very funny dude and an incredibly caring human being, but he has so many people tugging at him from different angles that doesn't often come out on the public stage.
Mm. Paddy, we've got a lot of listeners out here who might not necessarily play sport, but they want to learn how to be stronger mentally. You specialise in that. What would your advice be? And can you teach people to be stronger mentally?
Yeah, the first thing is to try and work out what that actually means for you in your specific circumstance. And it's a little bit like when I'm talking to coaches or athletes for the first time, I'll compare it to trying to run faster. Like, I can't make you Usain Bolt, but we can, with certain training methods, make every individual a little faster. So while we're not going to become Clint Eastwood in terms of how tough we are, we can handle some stressful situations a little better. And the biggest, you know, there's probably three main parts to it. One is being clear on what that looks like and on what you're trying to achieve. Two is being able to accept that part of it's not going to be comfortable and we're going to lean into that. And then number three is the ability to remain present and be with whatever emotions and distractions and pain might be happening and still take the right action at any given time.
So when you try and live in the moment and to be present, so, like, is that easier said than done?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a constant battle for everyone. And that's, you know, if I'm not being too flippant about it, that's why I have a job. Yeah. It's not something you can just teach and then walk away. It's the same as any sort of skill that takes time to develop, and it takes prioritisation. It needs to be something that's important to us, otherwise it gets overtaken with how big we get, how many points we score, how many likes on Instagram we get. And so there needs to be some consistent work and time put into it.
And do you think that needs to be taught in schools? Because you've got a front page of the Herald Sun today regarding Moana Hope, a footballer, about how she was attacked verbally there on the football field. There's even a situation here sometimes with some race callers that have been bombarded by people on social media because they've made mistakes. So how do you deal with social media and sometimes the backlash? And we all know that social media can be really positive, but it can be so negative at times as well. And I don't think people learn. I don't think people know how to handle it at the moment.
Yeah, I think, like, the best analogy I've heard for that is that social media is more like a playground in the sense of it's not good or bad. Like, if your kid goes out to the playground and he gets bullied, you don't tell him not to go to the playground anymore. You go and try and make the playground safer. And with social media, it's similar. Like, good luck trying to shut social media down or the internet. The bigger thing is to try and make it a safer playground for everyone to go out there, because it has so many positives to it. And research shows that people who actually engage in it in a positive manner have a positive effect on their well-being and on their mental health. Yeah. And so the more we can teach people what that looks like, and the more we can set up governance and some sort of rules and boundaries, the more likely that is to work for us.
is there any certain advice that you would give people? And I've read a lot of your work about the positive mindset to be successful, and that's what you try and drum into your athletes. Is there certain exercises all the way that you start your day, for instance, that can help you get to a positive mindset more often?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One that is really well known is the three good things exercise. It's basically trying to get you to train your attention on the good things that are happening in your life. Because while we can all get caught up in a bad review at work or a tough time in a relationship or not really feeling that good about your own performance or appearance or whatever it might be, there's always still good things in our lives if we want to look back and look deep enough into it. So that's one exercise. If you write three good things each morning that you're grateful for and potentially even why they've happened, that can be positive for you. And the other is, and this is probably where I focus more of my work, is on the practice of mindfulness, the ability to focus your mind on just one thing and not let it run away with thoughts and emotions and distractions. And that's really like building a muscle. There's certain neural pathways that if we continue to use them, they get stronger. So the more often we practice that, a recommendation is maybe 10 minutes every morning, the more able we are to find that sort of state of mind and that presence and that stillness when things aren't going well for us.
We could speak all day, and there's a few questions coming through from the SMS line and that I'd love to ask you if that's okay. First of all, this is a question from John. What do you think makes a great leader, Paddy?
To me, authenticity is number one. Caring is number two. They're both things that I mentioned about Bales before. And the ability to stay true to a direction. So the authenticity allows people to feel safe to be themselves. The clarity allows people to know where we're supposed to head. And then that open communication really helps others get better, and you're caring about those individuals more than yourself.
This is from Jason. Paddy, do you play a part in helping Ben Simmons' jump shot mentally?
Yeah, that's an ongoing work. But there's so much to Ben's game that is more than just his jump shot. We're not entirely focused on that, because without focusing on some of the positives in his game, we would lose the other effects he has. He's one of the most deadly people in the open court. He's an incredible passer when we're in the half court. And, you know, in only his third year, he's a second-year All-Star who is, I think, maybe second all-time behind Magic Johnson for triple-doubles. So we can look at things that he doesn't do that well, but in reality, what my job is, and in particular, what Ben really cares most about is, do we win or not? And so that'll be part of the discussion, if it's what we need to be able to do to win any given night. But most nights, Ben is much more valuable to us than whether he can hit a two-point shot from the corner of the key.
Paddy, can you describe to our listeners what a road trip is like for the 76ers? Do they all jump on a private plane, and how they go about preparing for games, especially when they might play three or four games within a week there on the road?
Yeah, well, we're actually about to set off on a 10-day West Coast trip in a week or so. Between now and then, we've got a couple of one-day trips to Milwaukee, and then we're back, and then we go to Cleveland and back. But the bigger, longer trips are a lot more like, I'd say, you know, like going to school camp, except with our own plane and five-star hotels. You pack a big bag. We do get on our own plane, a chartered plane, where all the seats are first class. And then we head off, and really, it sounds glamorous, but by the time you've done the circuit once, it is anything but. It's literally going on a work trip. There's not a lot of, like, fun and frivolity. We get to the hotel, everyone checks in, you might go to dinner somewhere, but you've got to get up at 8 a.m. and start work the next day. We'll practice, go back to the hotel and have a nap, and then we'll go to the field, go to the court. And so there's not a lot of time to play around and look at the different cities. It really is a work trip. And then we play that game, we fly out that night to the next city, and you do it all again over the next 2 days. So we'll do that four times on the West Coast trip, two in L.A., one in San Francisco, and one in Sacramento. And every time we get to a new spot, we check in, practice the next day, play that night, and do it again.
This is from Mikey, and we've got two more for you, Paddy. Thanks for your time, mate. With Paddy Steinford, of course, the Philadelphia 76ers performance and leadership boss. Paddy, how do you make the 76ers better on the road?
There are a number of investigations internally going on that front.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we knew the answer, it would have been fixed already. But there is a lot of research that shows there's a couple of factors that go against us on that, and it probably is a bigger discrepancy for us than other teams because our home court advantage is so strong, so it stands out a little more. That we can't do anything about referees, even though they've been shown to make a big difference for away teams. And interestingly enough, when there are more stars involved, the discrepancy is larger. We have a few stars. But one, you know, a couple of things that we're looking at is our ability to reduce the game to familiarity and really just keeping it on one play at a time. And when we're able to do that, hopefully that improves over the next. We've still got 27 games to go before we get to the playoffs. And last year we weren't, wasn't as glaring as it is this year, but we were not fantastic on the road. And then we went into the playoffs and probably overperformed on that front. You know, our ability to take Toronto to seven games when no one really rated us to get past four in that series, and we had to do a lot of it on the road, speaks to the fact that, you know, we know that it's an issue right now, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to stay like that.
And the last one before we let you go, Paddy, there's been a lot of players, especially say in the sport of cricket, like a Glenn Maxwell, and we've got Dane Beams that's taken an extended time off the game now, struggling with some mental demons. How much is that a problem for professional sport these days? And because of the way the world is, how do you overcome that and try and make it better? Or do you think that sporting organisations and teams are doing a pretty good job at that at the moment?
We're doing an okay job, and it varies from team to team, but you can always do a better job. One of the things that we need to understand is that often trying to be excellent at something does come at a cost. You can't have the best of both worlds, and if you're going to be an outstanding person and get paid millions of dollars, then you're not going to live a normal life by definition. And part of that is on the road to getting there, and there are some sacrifices you need to make. Part of it is once you get there, your life is very different. And so part of the ongoing evolution of what we do for both athletes and coaches, because it's a tough life for them as well, is helping educate people on their expectations of what life should be like and what it is like. And then making sure that the culture allows people to express when they're not feeling well, and we offer the right support at that stage. Like I said, I think it's being done relatively well on average. And it's getting better, but there's always room for improvement. And like in our early conversations, my early conversations with Dean Bailey, it's come a long way already since then, but more and more it is an issue, and hopefully we continue to put more and more emphasis on it.
Paddy, thanks for your time. As I pointed out, we could talk all day. I find it fascinating listening to you talk about these particular issues and the way that you go about your job. Best of luck with the 76ers. There's a lot of fans in Australia cheering on the 76ers, and let's hope they can go all of the way. And no doubt you'll get a big pay rise if you can get the championship done there this year.
Thank you, mate. We appreciate all the support from Australia. I know Ben's very proud of it.
Yep.
We definitely don't discount it, and hopefully we can do something special this season.
All right, I can't wait for you to organise Ben Simmons for us on RSN Central down the track. I'll appreciate that too, Paddy. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Ollie. Bye, mate.